Hello and welcome to the Crossbox Podcast. It is January of 2018, and it will probably still be January by the time I get this episode actually released to you.
That's right.
But, you know, it's a brand new year, and we've been a little bit schedule slippy lately.
That's okay, though.
So we decided we'd bring this this episode to you a little bit more casually, less structured, and, of course, the most important thing, less preparation.
Right, because Jay is moving.
Yes. In, like, 2 days.
Yeah, so this is from our much less formal than we usually are recording studio, and we use that term lightly.
It may get more formal in the future. I mean, we're going to have a lot of spare bedrooms for the first couple of years.
Yeah. So, but all that's in the future. We're talking about the now. And what has come out right now, Jay?
Yes, you may not have heard about this, but there was actually a new Star Wars movie released.
Right, last week.
Yeah.
Month.
The Last Jedi, I think it was?
Yes.
Something like that, yeah. Anyway, we know this is breaking news, really, just bringing to you. It's basically like something that just happened.
Right, we're as good as CNN.
Could not be any more recent news. But, you know, having seen this movie, you know, on opening night, basically, like the fanboys we are.
Yep.
We didn't actually see it on opening night.
We're also not that big fanboys.
Right. But anyway, we did see this movie, and we decided that in classic soapbox fashion, we would bring you a little gripe session about it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Gripe away.
Well, I think it's important first to establish what we actually feel about this movie.
Yep.
Namely, that it's a Star Wars-ish feeling movie that's not especially well executed as a piece of storytelling.
Right. There's a lot of things in this movie that don't work, but I still have to admit and give some credit that there were a bunch of cool things in it, effects and set piece wise, and I still had fun. Of course, the fun barrier for me is actually quite low, because I can go to something like Resident Evil The Last Chapter, which was atrocious, and still enjoy it.
Right.
I love terrible action movies. So, you know, if you have something with Jet Li, you know, talking in badly dubbed English, I'm like, yeah, this is great. Or at least in terms of enjoyment, great enjoyment, not great movie-wise.
You should get a copy of Fearless sometime, speaking of Jet Li.
I think I have that. Yeah. Anyway, but we're not talking about Jet Li. He wasn't in this movie. He would have improved this movie.
He would have.
Jet Li is a Jedi.
Or perhaps,
man, that'd be awesome.
Bring like him and Jackie Chan both in, if they could. That'd be great for the Chinese market, wouldn't it?
It really would.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they already do kind of wire fighting-ish stuff. Just add the Force.
Yeah.
And lightsabers. Everybody loves lightsabers.
It's true.
All right. So, but you didn't come to hear us be positive.
Right.
Screw that. You came to hear us be negative.
Whatever the opposite of screw that is. Yes, let's
do
it.
Let the flame fest begin, to quote Linus Torvalds.
Right, so, I don't know, I think the first line of attack is just that the story in The Last Jedi is not really all that good, in the sense that it doesn't accomplish anything.
Right.
Well, I suppose it accomplishes a little bit, but at the beginning of The Last Jedi, we have a ragtag fleet of rebels on the run from the First Order, which is totally not the Empire.
Sounds like Battlestar Galactica.
Right, and then at the end of The Last Jedi, we have a band of ragtag rebels on the run from the evil First Order.
Still sounds like Battlestar Galactica.
Right, and, you know, the problem is that it didn't, like, not much really happened over the course of the movie.
Right.
Basically, everything the main characters did ended up being, well, I mean,
Futile,
pointless.
Like resisting the Borg.
Right.
I'm going to bring in as many other references, I think, in this thing just to clown this up. I also want to point out something about the main story and, well, kind of pieces of the main story. I think there was also a bit too much creative freedom in this movie. Because a lot of things that the previous movie set up as important were just kind of ignored. And I think that's to the detriment of a number of points in the movie where I'm having those moments where I'm going, hey, wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
For example, let me just fire off an example here. We've got Snoke, right? The big bad. And, oh yeah, by the way, there's going to be spoilers in this. So not sorry. But so Snoke apparently corrupted Kylo mostly without Luke knowing. So he's seems to be good at this, but we know nothing about Snoke, and we also, the Force is massively inconsistent in what it can and can't do, so Snoke can, from across the galaxy or something, corrupt Kylo way over there. Luke, it hasn't a clue, and yet in the same room as Kylo, he has no clue that Kylo is about to cut him in twain.
Mm-hmm.
This did not make sense.
Well, and while we're on the subject of Snoke, I want to point out that he's got kind of some backstory trouble, too, and that he has no backstory.
Right.
And yet, he's this kind of old-looking dude, and we're not, you know, what, we're 15, 20 years, say, after. right. the events of the Return of the Jedi.
Yep.
And, I mean, Snoke would have had to be around somewhere at that time.
Yeah,
perhaps,
so...
I don't know, doing nothing, but...
Why didn't Vader get him then?
Right.
Was he one of the Emperor's dudes? And it seemed like the Force Awakens was setting up with Snoke and Rey's parents and a whole bunch of other stuff, like, plot threads to be dealt with in a subsequent movie, and this movie set fire to those plot threads and completely ignored them.
Right.
And that doesn't... I mean, like, that really doesn't help, and in a couple of cases, like Snoke, for example, it really makes you start to think, hey, wait a minute. How does this work?
Mm-hmm. And some of that, like, the reason that's a problem, I mean, even in the Force Awakens to a degree, is because unlike when A New Hope came out, or for that matter, when The Phantom Menace came out, we're talking about a period of history that occurs after stuff we've already seen.
So, like, right.
The world, it needs to fit in, like, you need to fit in your new stuff into what's already happened. And that's a much harder task as a writer, but one that, Rian Johnson and company appear to have just kind of thrown up their hands and said, well, you know, can all these ideas we had. And, I mean, for that matter, there's also the revelation that the new Star Wars trilogy was not really planned as a trilogy. And while that's also true, I believe, of the original trilogy, at least up to immediately prior to The Empire Strikes Back. Right. It was not originally planned as a trilogy, but when they decided we're going to make the rest of these, they had some things in mind they wanted to do, and they figured out where it was going to go and
right.
how they were going
and
to
so
finish it off.
While Irvin Kershner did a lot of great things in Empire Strikes Back and made it the best movie that is a Star Wars movie, he also takes care to fit into like what came before in A New Hope, and he's got some things to set up. And when you see, I forget who directed Return of the Jedi, but he's also like there's a thread there. So while it's not as perfect as something J. Michael Straczynski plotted out, like say Babylon 5, it still worked as a unit. And you're right, good point about the prequels, because going back is hard from a story perspective, back short term. Because we know Obi-Wan has to live, so a lot of that tension is gone. We know when he dies. But you do get to have a lot more freedom with your backstory. And going forward a little bit, like this 15 to 20 years thing as opposed to 50 or 100, when you can just kind of hand wave things away, is also really hard for you know, that reason.
And I'd argue it's probably harder going forward because you have to build organically off of stuff you've already done. Whereas when you're doing prequels... Ordinarily, there's some conflict that drives the beginning of a story, especially
right.
a story in a space opera kind of thing like Star Wars. So you've got some terrible situation our heroes are trying to overcome from the very, like, from moment one of your original series. When you go back, you can tell the story of how you got there, and that's a much easier thing than figuring out something all new to do.
With this weird, like, 15 to 20, however many year gap you have. Yeah.
And
it's hard.
In Star Wars, they decided not to really innovate at all and just went back to the status quo as of A New Hope.
Right. And something else that I think, I saw this in Force Awakens and it's also problematic here. So you have, again, this is that same stupid problematic 15-year timeline. But so you have the characters that were established as awesome from the previous movies, right? Han, Leia, Luke, and we love them. And I'm going to come back to Luke because I've got some stuff about Luke Ryan, loser. But so Leia, for example, plays a big role in The Last Jedi. My problem here is Leia's an established character who I know and really like. But she's older, she's not the driving force of this new story. We really need to move her, set her aside, so you can get time with the new characters and develop their characters. Give them character development time, which was another big problem this movie has. There's not a lot of character development.
Yeah. I would like to point out briefly in in the middle of your point.
Yeah.
That the Star Wars EU that was abandoned before the Force Awakens solved this problem in large part by having, you know, by allowing the heroes to keep their win.
Right.
Because when you're Luke Skywalker or Leia Organa or Han Solo, you know, in the nascent years of the New Republic, you've got stuff to do. Like,
right.
you know, you're a general or a very important governmental figure, or training a new batch of Jedi. You can't be out solving every single problem. Like, it's important, like you were saying, to take your beloved classic characters off the board somehow if you're trying to introduce new ones. And by going back to the framework in A New Hope, they really robbed themselves the chance to do that.
Right. Because let's play with that for a bit, so let's stick with Solo, Organa, or Han. But you promote them to general or senator or whatever. Well, now they have, you know, rank, and rank hath its privileges, but in a big system, rank also has its duties and its desks you drive around, which is fun because we see them out of their element, especially for Han. But also Leia, she hasn't been in a political setting for a while.
Yeah.
And that also means that the action sequences, we can leave deliberately and automatically because there's some natural separation here. Well, of course, Luke isn't going to go out in a bunch of X-Wings and try to shoot TIE fighters down. He's got other stuff to do, by definition. And having that that physical separation gives us time to focus on somebody new that we haven't seen before, while you still get that cameo from, hey, there's the character I grew up loving on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, as a recommendation for those of you looking for perhaps a really good example of this, go and read the X-Wing series book Solo Command.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's literally about Han Solo in command of the fleet. Actually, it's really pretty pretty excellent all around, I would say.
Yeah.
Aaron Alston, I believe he was an expert. I think my favorite of the two writers in the X-Wing series.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's too much positivity.
Let's
get back to Luke.
Okay, yeah, Luke. All right, so Rian Johnson really did an amazing thing, amazingly bad thing. Not only does he manage to completely ruin the character of Luke, he also manages to undo an entire trilogy's worth of character development.
Right, and I think it's important to note that at the beginning of that, original trilogy of character development, Luke was, you know, widely seen as this kind of whiny brat
right.
who turns into, you know.
But I want to go to Tashi Station and pick up some power converters.
Right, and then he turns into this self-sacrificing hero by the end, who's willing to give up himself altogether for the sake of his friends.
That's right. He goes to Bespin to save his friends, even though his training is incomplete. He really believes in saving his dad and really goes the extra distance to make that happen, even a number of times when you could have just done the simple thing, cut his damn head off, and gotten on with your life. But no, Luke doesn't do that. And so several things bothered me about this backstory. First off, you really ought to have shown me more on the fall of Kylo, mostly because how does the student defeat the teacher?
Yeah.
Right, so you have Luke and I think, 11 or 12 other kids and Kylo. And Kylo's supposed to have massacred his way through all the students. 12-on-1, the hard way, is a really sucky fight, last time I checked.
Oh, it's the conservation of ninjutsu.
Yeah, apparently. And then Luke should be able to wipe the floor with all of these losers, least of all one bratty upstart that's, you know, Han's kid. Come on. And then after Luke fails, apparently, unlike his mentor Obi-Wan, who at least tried to do something about his failure and then, you know, kind of stopped after half-baking Vader, half-baking Vader, Luke decides that, no, I'm going to go to this weird planet full of weird creatures and weird colored milk and just sulk.
Mm-hmm.
And we do get some good stuff out of Luke at the end of the movie with that projection nonsense. But at that point, we're hitting Pat Benatar's Too Little Too Late song.
Yeah.
Really, you've ruined this guy. It sucks. What the hell?
That was a pretty great moment. I mean,
it was.
Luke gets his mojo back a little. But it was
a little.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, you can't throw out three movies worth of character development and backstory and goodness and then say, no, it's cool. Look, he gets his awesome 30 seconds. No.
Yeah. I think it's also fair to say that it's kind of a shame to waste a Mark Hamill performance. I mean,
yep.
I guess nobody was really especially impressed with his acting chops back in the day, but I mean he's developed over time. His work as the Joker in the various voice acting spheres has always been excellent.
Yeah, it's great. As another aside, if you want to see some awesome Mark Hamill stuff, he does a reading of the Return of the Jedi script between Luke and the Emperor, where he does Luke's voice as Luke's voice and the Emperor's voice as the Joker's voice.
Nice.
And it's really, really funny, and it's got all the goofy Joker laughter you would expect, and it really changes the tone of the whole scene in a lot of really fun ways.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think
look that up.
Mark Hamill was kind of underestimated as an actor.
Yeah, and again, wasted here. This should have been a lot cooler than it was. Also, I want to point out that we really wasted the opportunity to see Luke as a teacher. And not just from I really wanted to see Rey go through a proper 80s action training montage. Setting aside that goal, which is very selfish.
Well, all the pictures we saw from production of,
right.
What's her name, Daisy Ridley running around with Mark Hamill on her shoulders. We didn't get any of that.
Nope. And just seeing Luke as a teacher would have been cool to see what he learned from Yoda, and Obi-Wan and their failures, as well as his failures. You know, second time around is you're usually better at something.
Mm-hmm.
And I really didn't think, as an aside, I didn't think Yoda was that good of a teacher, but, you know, that's just me. So I would really like to see that. Being robbed of that was depressing. It was very, like, postmodern, deconstructionist, nihilist, crappy nonsense on an island.
I want to pull out a word you said in there.
Yes.
Nihilist, actually.
And yes.
That's a good kind of description of the entire movie.
Depressingly so.
Well, let's pop briefly over to the extended Canto Bite sequence, where they come up with, what's his name?
Can I just throw a quick aside about the Canto Bite sequence before we continue on with it? First, well, two things. One, lame, because I can go see horse racing at Churchill Downs right now on Earth. Two, the entire sequence can be cut from this movie without materially altering the plot. And it only takes one line from Admiral Holdo to do so. But we're going to set her aside for another time. Continue Canto Bite sequence.
All right.
Useless sideshow.
What's his name? The
DJ. Hacker.
Yeah. And the actor.
Slightly less cut rate Antonio Banderas.
I feel like he's fairly famous as that sort of thing.
Yeah, I know. His name escapes me.
I'm going to look this up real quick because I can do that.
Right, IMDb is an awesome tool. Anyway, so we're here in the Canto Bite sideshow, which is useless, where we're going to run around. And by the way, if you had less Leia...
Benicio del Toro.
Benicio del Toro.
Anyway, so...
So, let's continue.
While he's playing himself there...
Yes.
He goes into this kind of extended spiel about everyone there is selling weapons to both sides and so on. And like you said, you said the word nihilist, and that's kind of an accurate portrayal of the philosophy that Rian Johnson's kind of espousing through this movie. There's the occasional thing about hope, but in the end, our heroes did a lot, accomplished nothing, and are worse off than when they started.
Yep.
And that's not really a very Star Wars-y kind of...
No.
Yeah.
It really isn't.
We'll see in... at the end, The Empire Strikes Back kind of ended on a dark note, but...
Ish.
It was possible to look up. Like, we hadn't gone completely downhill. I mean,
right.
Luke learned some stuff.
There was
like
new hand.
A big, important character moment in there. I mean,
there's a lot of character development in Empire Strikes Back. The rebels are down but not out in a different way than they were at the beginning of the movie. So there's some actual change that they've gone from hiding from the Empire on an ice ball to hiding from the Empire on ships.
Yeah.
And Han has been captured by evil Jabba the Hutt, but they have some leads on how to get him back. So they've kind of set up the next movie, maybe a bit too much. But again, there's some progress there. And Han has also made, despite being frozen in carbonite, he's made some significant character development too. We've also seen it from Lando,
mm-hmm.
right? So Lando is kind of the Benicio del Toro type character, except remember how, you know, he has the heel face turn where he says, hey, I'm going to actually support these guys because the Empire is giving me the shaft and it sucks.
Yeah.
And doing the right thing is the correct move for Lando to make. And that's kind of the message that Star Wars is you know, giving us. There's some hope there.
Well, yeah. And the problem I have with... the problem I don't have with The Empire Strikes Back, I'll start with that, is that although it's kind of a bleak spot, our heroes have made it out. They've escaped the Empire's clutches. They've, you know, survived their encounters. They've not lost as badly as they could have lost.
Right.
You know, there's stuff like optimism to be had there. Whereas at the end of The Last Jedi, it's pretty bleak. I mean, you've gone from just the very barest seed of rebellion to almost nothing, and
right.
You put out a call for help and nobody came.
Right, yeah, because nobody cares.
Yeah, and that's just, it's very counter to the message of Star Wars, I think, generally, which is to say that, you know, good prevails.
Well, not only good prevails, but that, like, people who are heroic do things which aren't necessarily in their interest of self-preservation because they're the right thing to do.
Right.
Example from the prequels. Obi-Wan is on Geonosis in episode 2. He needs help. He calls the Jedi Council and is all like, hey, there's an army of droids here. This is bad. I need help. Oh, look, I've been captured by Droidicus.
Mm-hmm.
Anakin and Padme are off on a romantic jaunt not too far away. They decide, let's go rescue this guy. Now, are they literally marching into the teeth of an army? Yes. Is this a good idea from a let's live standpoint? No, it's not. But they do it because when you have a friend on a planet who's in trouble, you go help his dumb ass. Even if it means putting yourself at risk. That's what friends do for friends. That's what heroes do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Let me hit a real world example. 9/11, fire department, those twin towers. They've been hit by airplanes. You don't know how long they're going to stay standing. Does FDNY care?
Nope.
Nope. They go right in to pull people out, to save whoever they can save. And do they die? Some of them do. But that's what being a hero is. You give, if necessary, everything, but you give of yourself for others. That's a really hard lesson to learn, actually, for, you know, kids. And that's one of the good things that comes out of the original Star Wars movies. And the prequels. The prequels do the same thing. For all the bitching people have about the prequels, there's some good stuff there.
Yeah. That's something we had earlier in preparation for this episode, that although, you know, the postquels, the sequels are, it's kind of the newest trilogy.
Yeah,
is
these new movies.
Technically competent filmmaking.
Yep.
It's just there's not very much story wrapped up in there.
No.
Whereas the prequels were technically highly incompetent storytelling.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't say that Lucas didn't have a vision. He didn't have a story he wanted to tell. He had a plan in mind, like to show this, like the decline and fall of this guy who was supposed to be the great savior of the galaxy and turned out to be much worse than that.
Kind of a jerk.
Yeah. But, you know, like we had this big arc, and even it was clumsily portrayed on screen. There's the germ of a good story in there.
Right.
And if you close your eyes and just kind of take the impression, the vaguest impression of the prequels, that arc is pretty compelling. Like you have this overconfident, crumbling ancient order that can't see what's right in front of it because they don't want to.
Right.
And you have this new upstart evil that is popping up from nowhere that prevails because the good people are too blinded by their own traditions, their own past to realize what's going on.
Right. For evil to triumph, all that's yeah. required is for good men to do nothing.
Precisely.
Edmund Burke, I believe. Benefits of a classical education.
Yeah.
That's a really good point, that there's that the execution, a lot of like the little, well, some of the writing is better now. I beg to differ on the your mama jokes. Really, Ryan? Mm-hmm. Your mama jokes were lame when we were in high school. That was, what, 10 years ago? 11?
Yeah.
Come on, man. Update your stuff. And that's not like a 70s thing to a modern thing. Like, you know, I can forgive some things for not aging well. No, that's when the movie came out, these jokes were lame. And way overly try hard. I like the fact that the humor in the classics and the prequels was much more subtle.
And I think more universal, too.
Yes. Yeah. Better in a lot of ways. So those are all some solid points. I'm with you there. I want to bring up on Canto Bite also this Rose character. Again, we don't get enough of her. We need more of her to care, and doesn't have enough of an arc. Really isn't putting Finn through enough of an arc. Again, I'm going to say, hey, if you would cut this movie down, Peter Jackson wannabe, and trim the fat and focused on the characters you want to focus on, because, hey, this is movie two. Even the new Star Trek movies, by the second movie, had really gotten over cameos from Leonard Nimoy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and whoever, right? It's just like, no. There's like the briefest of moments of Leonard Nimoy in Into Darkness, which I think is the second Trek film, the redone series. And they focused on the new characters because you need to. They're the ones that need to develop. Leia's already had her damn plot development. Can we talk about Admiral Holdo now?
Actually, I've got to say. You were just... how did you enter into that last segment of yours?
Rose. Character development, Finn.
Yeah.
Lack thereof. Like, we need to focus on them and actually get somewhere with them.
It'll come back to me.
All right. Well, let's talk about Admiral Holdo. So, annoying because... Let's see, where to start? Well, first off, side note with Poe, last time I checked, when you demote someone, there's usually some kind of consequence beyond some kind of, like, immature snarking at them. And that really didn't happen here, which is lame. Yeah, if you're going to demote him, like, well, isn't someone else CAG? Or whatever space CAG title you have in Star Wars. And then we have Holdo being basically a martinet and a really lousy commander and not even explaining that she has a plan. And then we have a tired mutiny subplot, yawn, roll my eyes. And then at the end of it, Holdo sacrifices herself. And that sacrifice is problematic for two reasons. One, from a story standpoint, this is lame because I don't care about Admiral Holdo yet. I mean, you've basically told me she's a good commander, but we haven't seen it.
The opposite, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, she's antagonized a character that I like, right? Poe is one of the heroes you've set up before, so I like Poe, so therefore people who antagonize Poe I tend not to like, just naturally, reflexively, right? The enemy of my friend is my, probably my enemy. You know, to grossly abuse and paraphrase Nietzsche a little there. But, so then when she sacrifices herself, this really doesn't have much meaning to me because I don't care about the character. If Poe is doing the sacrificing, or if it affects Poe more, Poe sees it, you know, that's better. If Poe is forced to be the fish out of water, that's better. If Poe actually is made to be a commander, so rather than doing the stupid mutiny storyline, if Poe is sitting from the command bridge giving orders rather than carrying things out, that's much more difficult. Really, an example of how to do that kind of character development well is the new Battlestar Galactica, where Starbuck is injured and can't participate in a strike. So she plans the strike, but she can't carry it out. And so she has to sit there with Bill Adama in the, you know, the briefing room with the little model ships, watch and listen on the radio and hear people die and know she can do nothing about it. And have to trust them to complete the mission. That's really hard for a character, and that really put Starbuck through some great character development. Also, that sequence is problematic. Let's get technical. If I can turn a ship into a giant hyperspace torpedo and wreck stuff, why am I not doing that all the damn time?
Well, see, I didn't have as much of a problem with that one, just because, you know, the Rebellion operating on limited resources can't afford to go and, you know, sacrifice all those hyperdrives, which, I mean, we've established are fairly hard to come by and fairly expensive parts.
Well, I think we only established that for that one Nubian 327.
Well, yeah, something. I think we can extrapolate from that. Well, also, I think the laws of narrative consistency require that if it were easy, we would have been doing it a lot more often already anyway.
Yeah,
that's kind of back explaining, but
yeah, no, see, the back explaining bothers me, and I would have liked to see like this be harder or some other. Well, actually, really, I would have liked to see a more traditional kamikaze thing, because that
credit
made
credit where it's due. That was a really cool sequence as far as cinematography goes.
Yeah, as far as visual effects goes, that's cool. It's solid. It, like, watching things explode is nice. It's
just like the way they made it explode, that lovely black and white and silence. For once, it's like actually quiet in Star Wars in space.
Yeah, that's a, you know, creative choice. But, nah, you know, I still really don't like it. But again, reasonable minds can differ, right? You know, the thrust of our complaint is, you know, similar, even if on the details we don't always agree.
Ooh, that's, I can remember my thing again.
Yes.
So, right, you were talking about Canto Bight earlier and how it could be readily chopped from the movie. There's nothing that could be even more readily chopped from the movie.
Oh, go for it.
So you recall the space nuns on Luke's island?
Yes.
Yeah, just barely, of course, because they don't show up except...
They don't do anything.
Well, they don't show up except as punchlines in two jokes, which are completely unnecessary.
Right.
Maybe three jokes.
Again, try-hard humor.
At any rate, you could cut them from the movie entirely, and there'd be no difference whatsoever. They served literally zero purpose. They caused no conflict. They advanced no story.
Right. There's a lot of things here that this movie really felt like it needed a couple more rewrites in the editing room.
And at the, you know, carrying forward that topic about yonder space nuns, there was a moment I thought that was ruined by a misplaced joke that involved them.
Oh boy!
So you recall Rey, you know, twirling the lightsaber around on the edge of the
rock, yeah,
on the edge of the rock, and then she cuts through the big boulder, and that falls down and hits one of their wheelbarrow things, and then there's, you know, suddenly this silly moment where they're looking up and she's looking down, and it's awkward. And it didn't need to do that. I mean, you have this wonderful moment where you see a character kind of coming into her skills and, you know, testing her limits, and then going a little bit too far, right?
Yep.
Losing control, still like raw and untrained. And if you just stopped there, you have such a great character beat, but you ruin it by putting in a completely useless joke.
Right, and this would also be a good time to, instead of cutting to useless characters who could have been cut, this would be a good time to instead cut to Luke and have him say something.
Who was watching? He was
something.
Right there.
Do something, right? This is, I've taught people martial arts. This is when you offer something, right? Now, sometimes the correct thing is to try again. Sometimes you correct a form thing. Sometimes you say, yeah, you're going to have to learn not to do that, because there's nothing you can say to improve their technique at this moment. There's no obvious correction to make. Or sometimes, you know, you've already given a correction and you don't want to give them too many. But there's something from a teaching perspective that you need to do. You need to take action. This is a mandatory press, you know, a button on your controller to make your character say something.
Mm-hmm.
You incompetent ass. But I suppose I shouldn't get mad at Luke being a bad teacher, because look at the boneheads that taught him.
Yeah. So it's getting a little bit speculative at this point, but there's a storyline I think I would have much preferred to the one they actually wrote, at least as far as Rey, Kylo, and Luke goes.
All right.
So you have You have Rey and Kylo fighting side by side in Snoke's throne room.
Right.
Which is, you know, not a terrible fight scene, but not up to par with the best ones in the prequels, I would say.
Yeah, I want to point out one thing, though. There was something I liked here, which was that Kylo and Rey are both sloppy. And I'm sitting there, and I'm not a swordsman. Disclaimer. But I can tell, yeah, that's really sloppy work, guys. But character-wise, that is correct, because neither one of them are properly trained.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that. I dug that. So that part I liked. Yeah, it wasn't quite as spectacular as the prequel fight scenes. It's harder to make that happen, though, given that these two are basically Jedi blue belts or some other crappy, lame rank.
Anyway,
sub-master.
So they're fighting back-to-back, and there's this moment where Kylo says, "Join me, and together we will rule the galaxy as person and other person," more or less. And
yeah, this is about the same.
I feel like it would have been a much better story if Rey had said, "Okay, let's do this."
Right.
Well, because then you have this interesting moment where your main character has turned. That's a very effective device we saw in Knights of the Old Republic. Right. You've got a character you've come to know and trust and so on, and then who flips in a moment of temptation, and then suddenly you have a really wonderful framework set up for Episode 9, where Luke's got to go and get, you know, one or both of his students back. And that's like something that one, old Luke would have done.
Right.
And two, something that, like, a good way to, if you want to, like, to kill Luke off, that's a good time to do it.
Right. Yeah. So that he can kill, and that also gives him a chance to teach.
It completes something. His arc, basically, right?
It completes his arc, and it also lets him teach, maybe not force using, but some other teacherly moments or other fun with Luke, Poe, and or Finn.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to point out that the Holdo kamikaze death sequence could have been made much more impactful if Leia's the one driving the ship.
Right.
Just like, really, writers, come on. The person that you want to kill here is the person, or if I'm going to kill off a character, I'm going to pick the one that has the most impact, right? And also the one who I don't have any more character arcs left for? Gee, who would that be, Jay?
Well, it'd be probably the one played by Carrie Fisher.
Yeah. You know. It'd also be, like, super convenient because you can't film anything more with her now, unfortunately. So, but again, that, like, if Leia's doing that kamikaze thing, there's going to be a lot of fans screaming in the theater that first night just going, "No!
Yeah.
How could you?" Yeah, I could because, you know, I went there. Right. And that's, yeah. So, you know, if I'm going to have a death sequence, I really want it to punch my fans in the gut, kind of, you know,
yeah, precisely.
So that's how I do it. And again, the other nice thing there is if I don't kill off Holdo, then I have a chance to do more with that character and make her into someone, either an antagonist or a protagonist or someone who, you know, a friend who we care about. Right. Or she can, you know, so wasted opportunities again, Rian Johnson.
Yeah. And I think it's all sort of in service of this nihilistic point he was trying to make, that everything is meaningless, which again is not really a Star Wars point.
Nope.
Yeah.
It's also wrong.
Yeah.
You know, but there's a, you know, I-5 if you want to go play in traffic on it, Ryan.
Right out there in your neighborhood.
Exactly, yeah. Right. Just start walking, buddy. So, this thing needed work, and a lot of things felt like they needed to be plugged in more and have more consequence. I think that was something that really bothered me about that, the Canto Bite sequence, is that not, like, you can cut the whole damn thing. It doesn't do anything, right? It's just a vehicle to give Finn and Rose some alone time and introduce those kids that you did nothing with. But if we look at, like, let's go back to Empire, right? Or let's also do Episode 2, but first we'll start with Empire because it's better, right? What are the side arcs in Empire Strikes Back? Well, so after Hoth, we have a plot split, right? Leia and Han go to the asteroid field because they have to hide. But their ship is broken, so they have to go somewhere to fix their ship, which gets them to Bespin so they can be betrayed by Lando. Luke goes for training, right? We don't really have a side arc here.
Mm-hmm.
You just have kind of two plot arcs. But let's look at that. The Bespin arc serves a purpose, right? It gets Han and Leia to this point, and we eventually have some consequences where Han gets frozen in carbonite. We meet Lando. We give Lando the opportunity to become a hero, which he does. There's some funny bits where Chewie wants to kill him because, "What did you do to my friend, you jerk?" And No, I don't believe you're a good guy now. And it also gives Luke some consequences for rashly jumping in to save his friends and quit school early. Stay in school, kids. Yeah. Don't lose your hand. You'll end up in a box under the bridge with no hand.
Yeah. I don't think that's usually how that works, but...
No, no, that's exactly how it works. Okay. Come on. We need to replace all this nihilism with good, clean, wholesome life lessons, like not losing your hand because you left school early.
Right. Stay in school, kids.
Exactly. So, again, so if you see that movie, that's a lot more of a tighter set of arcs, right? And then we reunite and all our heroes are united at the end looking for Han and trying to figure out how to beat the Empire. Episode 2, again, we don't have extra... We really just have an A and a B arc. We don't have a third one because you only have 2 hours in this movie and 45 minutes of those 2 hours is going to be fighting.
Yep.
Right? So we have the two arcs split again where we have Obi-Wan goes to Kamino where he finds the clone army, which they're going to need. That's going to be a MacGuffin to help them fight all those droids that he finds on Geonosis where he gets captured. Anakin and Padme have their weird junket, excuse me, where... They're going to fall more in love, which is setting up Anakin's fall later, right? And it's also getting him closer so he can go try to rescue his friend Obi-Wan like you do, fail like you do when you're kind of a dumb kid, and then set up all the Jedi stuff. Again, there's nothing wasted here. If I cut out an arc, you have problems. Like, the story is missing train cars.
Mm-hmm.
Canto Bight doesn't do anything, right? There's not really a consequence here. It just sets up the introduction of, you know, DJ to betray the fleet. Which, again, you can have two throwaway bits of dialogue, and then the plot goes completely away. The train is recoupled. It's really kind of lame.
Well, yeah. So that's just kind of the way it goes in that arc. I mean, Finn and Rose leave.
Yep.
Then some stuff happens. Then they're reunited without accomplishing anything.
Right. They didn't get any MacGuffin. They didn't do anything.
Right. They tried to get a MacGuffin, but then they got thrown under the bus, and then had to steal a ship and. You know, nothing worked.
Nothing happened.
They basically, they were completely tangential to the story as it was. And I'm sure you could have found something better to do with them, or even just like Finn, and you know, kind of play up that Finn and Poe friendship that didn't get nearly enough time. Because
it was so fun. That was one of the best parts of The Force Awakens. Well, those two.
And that, I didn't even think they sold that enough. I mean,
no.
Yeah, they only gave them like a couple of minutes of screen time together. They needed a lot more to, you know, if we'd escaped from a ship together, if you know, okay, John, hop in the back and, you know, shoot these things down for me. I'm gonna fly us down to the planet.
And I'd be snarking the whole way.
Right, and then, you know, we'd I'm sure have a good time doing that.
Oh, but
then
we ever.
But then suddenly we're crashing and then we're nowhere near each other anymore and we don't see each other again for, you know, a couple of days. I'm not gonna have to, like, give you a big hug. It's like, oh, hey, I'm glad you made it or whatever.
But, yeah, exactly, you know. Right. There's, you know, we haven't had that, like, relatively speaking, we haven't had that much bonding time.
Yeah.
To go crazy.
Right, not enough
to... Though, to be clear, though, we're also not big man-huggers. We're just not...
Well, in general, but even so. I mean, even, like, it doesn't... Like, that kind of enthusiasm in The Force Awakens wasn't sold. And
nope.
I think it works better in The Last Jedi because you've had some time to forget about how quickly they tried to push it on us in
The Force Awakens. Well, the other thing, too, is you have that intervening time when presumably they've had more adventures together. And now we see...
Well, what's his name? Finn's been in back to the whole time, right?
Oh, yeah, I suppose he has. Never mind.
Yeah, and that's it's basically like the next week as far as the thing goes. It's not like...
A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back.
Right, where there's obviously a bit of a time jump in there because the Rebel base is somewhere altogether different.
Yeah, and that kind of thing worked a lot better because, again, if you have that little bit of narrative time, you can sweep a lot of things into that, where, like, Luke and Han are better buddies now because they've had a bunch of time to bond off-scene. Shut up, it is. Get on with it. You know, so that actually brings up another good point, that both the prequels and the classic trilogy were much better at explaining what needed to be explained.
Mm-hmm.
And so there have been a lot of, like, well-publicized things where Rian Johnson goes on to explain something about his movie. And every time I see that, I laugh and I think, what the hell's wrong with you? I mean, seriously, explain your movie? What?
Yeah, that's not allowed.
That's not what you do. Your movie should explain itself. It should stand on its own. Another great 80s action movie song. But, like, you look, George Lucas didn't walk around explaining The Empire Strikes Back with Irvin Kershner. He just didn't. It was fine as is.
It stood on its own. It told you everything it needed to tell you.
Yeah. If there was something that needed to be said, it said it. And if, you know, and things that didn't need to be said could go unsaid or left assumed or to your imagination. Because we can imaginate.
Yeah. And to some degree, when you're working on sequels, you have that problem. You need to be able to explain a little bit more, especially for such a long running property as Star Wars. Anyway, the fact that it's going back to J.J. Abrams doesn't give me a great deal of confidence either, because you know his movie had plenty of problems too.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
It's for another rant though.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, that's one thing I think Rian Johnson did okay at The Force Awakens. felt very compressed in both space and time. Like, everything happens right after the other thing and right next door. Whereas at least in The Last Jedi, there was a feeling of traveling places, and like not right. everything happened, like not everything had to lead directly immediately with no delay into the next action sequence.
Yeah.
And that's a big weakness, I think, in J.J. Abrams' filmmaking.
The one thing I do want to point out, though, is that there was a bit of Frodo staring at the ring syndrome in The Last Jedi, where you have a lot of, I'm with you in liking the notion of adding space and time and some travel sequences. The problem with travel is it's boring, right? What do children say on a road trip?
Are we there yet?
Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Well, exactly.
I want to point out that you can do travel effectively. Like,
you can.
Like in A New Hope, where they're on right. their way somewhere and Luke's learning something. And that's, I think, what Rian Johnson did at least a couple of places.
He did a couple of places.
There's some character development or something going on during these
travels. No, not character development. There's something happening. Yeah. It's just not developing characters. Poe flirts with the notion of character development, like a hot chick in a bar, but then, no, she's lost that loving feeling and he gets shot down in flames every stinking time.
I think He'd probably appreciate that comparison.
He would. Yeah. He would. Like, wherever Poe Dameron is, he's raising a glass to that comparison.
Yeah, like, slicking his hair back.
Exactly, yeah. Right? Thumbs up. Yeah. Get a beer to put out those flames, Poe. Try again, buddy. But really, like, he should have had some good character development and misses that chance. I mean, and again, the other thing, too, I'm going to go right back to that sequence of Starbuck in, I think, The Hand of God episode, season one of BSG. You know, because we see Poe's ship get blown up. This is the perfect time for Poe to be stuck in a command center watching, right? Or, I mean, the other thing, too, he's good buddies with General Leia. And in my version, where General Leia is the one who decides to be the guidance system in a human torpedo, that's going to hit him a lot harder. And probably just like us, right? So we have this proxy for our feeling of right. just, like, watching out the viewports, realizing, hey, where's Leia? Wait, crap. And then, you know, cut to her looking out the viewport as the ship is, you know, accelerating into the big batarang. Mm-hmm. And then he's going, no, and banging on the window or whatever, right? That's perfect. That's great. Yeah. That's really, you know, setting up what we feel.
There's some Greek word for that and sort of thing, but I forget what it is.
Greek awesomeness is what it is. Yeah. Winning at plot. That's what it is. Whatever Greek for winning at plot is.
Do not know offhand.
Oh, man. All right. What other movie references can we put in this that aren't Star Wars?
I don't know. Well, do you have further points to make? I'm just about out of criticism.
I think we're pretty close to done. Let me make sure I've covered everything. Hold on. I want to make a couple more positivity things.
I think that's a good way to round out this episode, though.
Yeah.
So I've got a couple of things that I did not have a problem with that some people did in okay. The Last Jedi. I think that's a good place to close it out. A little bit of happiness to end with.
Sure. Well, yes, okay. Because let me just add one thing. We are not nihilists. We are anti-nihilists.
Right.
And we want to tell you that everything has a point, even a stupid, annoying, badly written, nihilistic right. Star Wars movie.
Gosh darn it, this is Star Wars. We're going to end on a slightly hopeful note.
That's yeah, right.
The music will swell and we'll go into John Williams' credit score.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So, and you do that and I'll probably have some things to say that I like too. Go,
right.
buddy.
So it's not going to be things that I liked so much as things that I thought were appropriate and didn't mind that other people were complaining about.
Right.
So number one. Your space bombers. I mean,
yes.
As much as silly as they are as pieces of military hardware, that's okay. It's Star Wars. It's supposed to be basically World War II in space, but you're talking about the flying.
Yep. And the one thing we were missing was 12 o'clock high in space.
Right.
The Memphis Bell, so many great movies.
Right. And, you know, like the uniform being the bomber jacket. I liked that, okay?
It was great.
Sue me.
If you didn't like that, you're wrong. Go sit in a corner and in your wrongness and be wrong about yeah. it. Because having somebody being able to go bombardier distance to target, yes.
Yeah. I didn't mind the arcing bolts from the weird artillery lasers.
Yeah.
That was, you know, it's Star Wars. It doesn't have to make sense.
Yeah, shush. It just has to be consistent with itself.
That makes more sense than some of the stuff they put in the prequel space combat scenes.
Or other things in this movie.
And those were all also cool, and that's
yep.
allowed. It's
yep.
one of those things where it's just, like, to look cool on screen, that's what it's supposed to do.
In space opera, like, it must look cool. So arcing giant artillery laser bolts, that looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
In the prequels, Revenge of the Sith, still the greatest battle in the space battle in the Star Wars movies. We've got bits where they go all frickin' Horatio Hornblower on each other. Makes
yeah.
sense? No. Cool? Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's that. This is maybe a little bit more controversial. I kind of like Hux. I think he's got that, like, proper smarmy imperial, you know, looking way, way down his nose at everyone he Like, well, yeah. Just at everyone, really. He's got right. like he's got that classic Imperial sort of feel to him, and
he does.
Yeah, the rest of the First Order kind of is missing that. I feel like.
Yeah, they're all too tryhard except for Hux. The other thing I want to point out is that Hux.
Well, I think the reason they're all too tryhard is because they're not tryhard enough. Only Hux is tryhardy enough to actually be an Imperial.
Right, to pull this damn thing off. Yeah. You know, I also want to point out that I think the humor around Hux actually generally works. Setting aside the bullshit your mama jokes, the humor with Hux that isn't stupid, try hard, rub your nose in it is actually some of the better humor in the piece, and I really like the relationship between Hux and Kylo.
Yes, that's well done. Okay, let's see what else.
What do we like?
I liked seeing A-wings in the hangar yep. and a little bit in that first sequence. That's yep. I love the A-wing. It's just such a cool little fighter.
Yeah, no, more fighters was good. Having fighters escort the bombers was classic. You know, I would have liked a little more in that sequence, but, you know, I'm right with you there. That was just too cool to not have in there. Let's see.
Ooh, cinematographically? In terms of cinematography, I really liked the fight on the salt flat
yeah.
at the end. That was just very... That was gorgeously shot and,
it was.
And well done. And like we mentioned earlier, that sequence also ends... in, you know, Luke's one cool moment in the whole movie. The poor guy.
I know. I also want to, like, point out that sequence on the salt flats for being Hoth-like without massively without just
ripping
like
off Hoth. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, like, my big complaint about Force Awakens was that this is A New Hope, but you just changed the names of the Jarratus Personae sheet. And the one thing I want to give Rian Johnson credit for, one of the things I want to give him credit for is he did his own thing in this movie.
Right.
And in a lot of cases, I think they needed work, but okay... You know, you still did your own thing. You didn't rip something else off.
Like, it's homage without being copying.
Right. So, the Salt Flats fight was really cool. And it was nice. And you had walkers. And it was clearly a Star Wars fight with walkers. And there will actually be a rant on the soapbox, by the way, from yours truly. Audience in the coming days about why walkers don't actually work. Damn it.
That's a good one.
You know, over here where physics applies. But I'm going to save it for another day. Having the walkers was really cool, and these were clearly like the walkers that I played with as a kid, but different enough to be cool. And that was something else I thought was missing from this, is that the TIE Fighters and X-Wings look really too much like TIE Fighters and X-Wings. We have them and that's good, but I wanted a little more flair.
Pizzazz.
Yeah, and something where it's like the sun, not the same thing, not the brother, the sun, where it's, things have changed a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was, I really liked that with the walkers, is that, hey, that's clearly like an AT-AT, but it's not one. It's its own coolness.
Rogue One, I think, did a good job of that, too, by having the doorless ones. That's very, yeah. like, jungle planet kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, and the weird TIE fighter analog things they had were also, like, we rearranged the wings and shapes and stuff, and it's clearly a TIE family product. You know, we bought this from Senar Fleet Systems, but it's different, and more of that would have been nice. Yeah.
I think that's probably a fair take on the new trilogy as a whole. I mean... The new trilogy, they've got to be like these big, giant tentpole movies that appeal to everyone in the U.S. and everyone in China and everyone in basically every market. So they're yeah. not going to be really high cinema ever.
No, and that's and okay.
That's okay. But I think the thing to be on the lookout for is the kind of off-the-trilogy movies, the Star Wars story movies. Because anyone who's writing a movie that's called A Star Wars Story rather than Star Wars Episode Roman numerals can... Like, they have a little bit more latitude. They don't need to write a story that... feels tonally like a Star Wars movie and looks like a Star Wars movie and plays out exactly like a Star Wars movie.
Right.
And Rogue One, I think, is a good example of that. They wrote a, you know, decent war movie set in the Star Wars universe.
Yep.
And it felt Star Wars without being, you know, something that I would call Star Wars Episode Roman numeral.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I have some hopes there, though. I also have some worries, but, you know, I always have a bad feeling about this kid.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that, but I'll also probably go see them and then bring rants to you, dear reader,
yes.
dear listeners and well, readers, yeah. hopefully.
Probably more likely people who are listening are also readers. But
we'd like to hope so.
Anyway, I think that more or less wraps
us up. I think
that
covers it. Well, let me see. Have I done enough hopeful positivity at the end? I know I'm the grumpy, cynical one. But
you joined in on some of mine, I think. That's,
yeah, is that enough?
Did you have anything in particular that you liked that wasn't on my list?
Well, I mentioned already, but I want to highlight it again, the fight with the Ren, with Kylo Ren and Rey and the Red Guards, I thought was really well done. I enjoyed it. The Red Guards were trained but not Force users. Rey and Kylo were sloppy Force users. I also like that we found some materials that seem to be able to stop a lightsaber sometimes, They had to be clever in that fight. That fight was just a well-executed... It was sloppy, but, you know, well-executed sloppiness. I like the good brawl. Good brawl on a ship. I like that. And actually, I want to bring up the fact we saw some nice, big Imperial muscle in space. Yeah. Even if a lot of them blew up, that's okay. That's kind of what they're there for.
Yeah. The same way that the end of the Return of the Jedi was nice. Just you got that sort of... Yeah, they actually do have a really big fleet when you get right down to it.
Yeah, they're the big, bad, evil empire... You know, for a reason. All of the other big bad evil empires are compared to them because they have a lot of, you know, offensive striking power, you know, home run hitters. Wait, no, wrong thing. That's baseball.
Close enough.
Yeah, whatever. Right. But no, so I thought a bunch
Corellian
of those...
baseball.
Exactly. But I thought a lot of the cool ships were really good. I would have liked to see more straight up space battle, but we got some in this movie, and that does.
Yeah, thumbs up.
Thumbs up from me. More fighters we can have, the better.
Yeah,
but no, all right, so now I think we're good. So I've said, you know, and also I want to say that the spaceships, the bigger, the other spaceships, beyond other than TIE fighters and X-Wings, I thought everything else was properly designed in that I could see it was the relative, the son or nephew of something from the classic trilogy, but again, was its own thing. It wasn't, you know, my dad flew one of those back in the Clone War kind
right,
of deals.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't have our script. Actually, nope. I want to talk a little bit about... some, you know, random upcoming stuff you can expect.
All right. Random upcoming stuff you can expect. I've mentioned that I'm going to be ranting about why walkers suck and don't work.
There will be most likely a Falcon Heavy launch before the next time we do one of these podcasts. And what that means is you should be watching the SpaceX YouTube channel for streams, because this, the Falcon Heavy is, if you're not familiar, basically three Falcon 9 cores that are, you know, linked together. But when you get right down to it, you can't really actually link together three rocket boosters all that well. So basically what it is, it's three rockets flying in formation.
Yep.
And even Mr. Musk himself says that's likely to be, to end in fireworks of some kind. It'll either be really cool if it works, or it'll make a really pretty fireball if it doesn't. So you should keep your eyes open for that.
Watch the skies, kids.
Yeah. I've got a post cooking at the soapbox about audience stats for 2017, which should be pretty cool when I get it all together.
Yep.
Yeah, lots of fun stuff. And lastly, the soapbox is now running HTTP 2.0, so it loads much faster. You should pop by and check it out sometime.
Yep. Dig through the archives, look for posts about why walkers are terrible. And have you finished a post on how to make your own recording studio setup?
No, but I'm going to try and write some of that immediately after we finish recording this, because I need all the stuff that's running right now for reference.
Super.
Yeah.
So if you're ever curious how we do it, if you're interested in making audio work in goofy Linux land, which is like La La Land except with more Linus Torvalds, check out our post. We'll be going through all about it. And don't worry, since it's written by Jay, aka Fish Breath, it'll be how to do it on the cheap.
Yes. Actually, paying for less than $70 a person, which is...
This is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Take that, fancy recording studios.
Like, we need them.
Yeah.
Anyway, as far as La La Land, but Linus Torvalds, that's much less easy on the eyes than either Emma Stone or Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, I know, right? It's just the best part of this. Yeah. I mean, come on, though. I could have said Richard Stallman.
Ugh.
And your mind went there.
Anyway, this has been the Crossbox Podcast for January of 2018. It's a production of Many Words Press, which you can find online at manywords.press. And you can keep up with our posts at soapbox.manywords.press. Our theme music is Royal Rumble by J-Man of ourmusicbox.com. And we'd like to wish you a Happy New Year, and we'll see you again soon.
And may the Force be with you, always.